of all the stages in all of the world, there is probably no other stage that has seen as many aviation notables as the stage here at Theater in the Woods. And trust me, tonight is no exception, as you've already seen. And each year, it seems that when you think, boy, we must have told every interesting story about every interesting pilot, we discover some new ones, and tonight is no different. You're going to hear from a 101-year-old pilot who is still very spry, and he was actually wondering backstage if he had to keep it clean tonight or if he could just kind of let loose. And I figure at 101, go for it. But he was very influential in helping forge relationships, especially in the World War II era between Saudi Arabia and the United States. And he did that by flying some DC-3s over there and getting the airline started in that country. So to tell you more about the very fascinating story of Joe Grant, I'd like to bring on an aviation notable in his own right, Mr. Ron Alexander, and he's going to help weave the tale of Joe Grant. Ron?
Welcome, everyone, this evening. We have a very interesting program for you. I think you're going to enjoy it. We're going to have a discussion with Captain Joe Grant. And Captain Grant and I have one thing in common, and that is a love for DC-3s. So we're going to discuss not only DC-3s, but Captain Joe's life from the early barnstorming days on. So I think you're going to find it very, very interesting. And here to tell you just a little bit more about Captain Joe prior to the interview is Dr. Michael Saba. And Dr. Saba has known Joe for years and has done quite a few he's done an interesting book on Joe and some of his exploits. So, Mike, if you would come out and tell us just a little bit prior to the interview.
Well, I'm really honored to be here tonight to introduce a gentleman that, as I get to know him better and better, I find that there's more and more to learn from him. He started flying in the 20s. His uncle was the first pilot to fly around the world as part of the U.S. Army Air Corps flight that went around the world in 1924, and that's who he learned to fly from. Started as an airline mechanic, started flying in the old post-World War II or World War I biplanes, and became a barnstormer. His story goes on, and Ron will have a chance to talk to you about that story, and you'll, in a couple of minutes, meet this gentleman. I had the honor to meet him as I was doing some work on some research regarding Franklin Delano Roosevelt and his meeting with the King of Saudi Arabia in 1945 aboard the USS Quincy. Roosevelt had been at Yalta meeting Churchill and Stalin, and then sort of secretly, the war was still on, secretly set up a meeting with the King of Saudi Arabia to talk about relations, to talk about oil, a lot of things. So they met in the Suez Canal. And they had a fabulous time together. And after they met, while they were meeting, the king gave the president a number of gifts. And President Roosevelt gave the king two gifts. He gave him a wheelchair because he noticed the king was getting a little bit old then. And he was using a cane. And Roosevelt, of course, had a couple of wheelchairs all the time with him. And he gave one to the king. And he gave him a DC-3. Now, that DC-3 is historic. It was flown into Saudi Arabia while the war was still on by Captain Grant. And the situation that developed beyond that was a story that you'll hear about up on the podium. Joe is going to be here the whole week. His book is for sale over there. You'll see it with an Oshkosh dust jacket on it and a logo of a DC-3. And tomorrow he'll be at an author's table. I believe around 4 to 4:15. He'll be at a forum tomorrow at the author's table. Wednesday, he'll be in the museum lobby. And Thursday night, he'll be one of the honored guests at the Gathering of Eagles. And so you'll get a chance to see him, meet him, talk to him, get an autographed copy of his book. But you'll be able to get some copies of that book tonight. And a special gift, Joe is also the manufacturer of puzzle rings. The world's largest manufacturer. He's an active businessman. He's 101 years old. He tells me he's going to retire when he's 107, because that's when his driver's license runs out. I had the honor of being up in a DC-3 with Joe. You'll see a few pictures about that. Only a couple of years ago, he took the controls. Hadn't been in that particular aircraft flying one for about 65 years. And I recently was with Joe in Saudi Arabia, where the King of Saudi Arabia and the Crown Prince and a number of other royal family members had a chance to see Joe for the first time in about 65 years. And the delight they had with seeing this man was probably the first American they'd ever saw was, had ever seen, was just quite the thing. Later in the week, on Thursday, we have the honor of flying in with Ron in a DC-3 to the Aerospace Square, Aeroshell Square. And we're going to have in that plane not only Joe Grant, but also the two grandsons of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and of King Abdulaziz of Saudi Arabia. Two very interesting characters in themselves that'll also be on that plane. You'll be able to see them flying in. And there's going to be another plane coming in with some kids that are disabled that will be quite an interesting component of it. So without further ado, I would like to introduce, and as Ron said, you have a gentleman here that, or as Jerry said, I guess, you have a gentleman here that might be a little edgy on his jokes, and so be a little careful here. You might have to cover your ears a bit. You know, you didn't, they said that Bob Hope was going to be on the stage when he was 100, didn't make it. They said George Burns was going to be on the stage when he was 100, didn't make it. I present to you 101-year-old Captain Joe Grant.
Well, welcome. We certainly would like to welcome you to AirVenture, Captain Joe. That's our pleasure, and I guess this is not the first time you've been to Oshkosh, is that correct?
Oh, this is a number of times. I've been a loyal comer here. It's a highlight of our life. This Oshkosh is the greatest happenings going to happen every year that we talk about during the year is Oshkosh.
Absolutely. I think we all agree with that, Joe. And you were born in 1908, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, and so there weren't very many airplanes around in those days. So how did you become interested in aviation and when?
Well, I guess it was natural because this uncle had the good fortune of being one of the pilots to have the opportunity to try to fly around the world. He was successful. Five of them started out and three of them made it. But I guess that perhaps planted the thought. Anyway, I'll tell you about farmers. And I guess I'm safe here. I was going to tell you about airline pilots, but Ron is here and he already knows about us. But before the evening is over, I'll just give you one or two highlights of what some of us talk about in the cockpit. I know our passengers back there think that we're just talking about the airplane, but it's not altogether true. Anyway,
I think that's true. That's yeah, very...
Ron's probably going to bear me out in this way, so I may as well tell you. There's the three S's that we always talk about, and Ron knows about them. I guess it's, what is it? It's sex, salary, and seniority, I believe is it. Or is it right. The other way around?
That's right. In which order there, Joe?
And I have to give you a clue you in on something. Finally, when you get to be senior, I thought, oh my, this is great. I get to be senior one of these days, and I can get that choice of the first flight. But I thought there were other rewards, you know, and the three S's. And now when I get to be this age, I found I've lost. It's not altogether true, so don't pass this word on. Luckily, I asked my dad about that. And he says, Joe, he said, you'll have to get someone older than I am.
Well, Joe, tell us what was the first airplane that you flew? What did you solo in? Which airplane?
OX Waco 9.
Waco 9, that's
Waco
great.
Waco 9. Waco 9 had the bungee landing gear, you know. And then the 10, I thought, oh, I was up in the world when I got to a 10. And then all the rest of the UX jobs followed. You know, in the old days, all airplanes were built around engines. You had to find an engine first. I guess the cars are that way even today. So, when the first war was over, we didn't, during the war, First World War, we didn't have some good engines. So we used a Hisso, the Italian design, and the UX-5 that Curtiss came out with. I guess a good number of our early barnstorming airplanes were UX-5, the UX-5 Waco, UX-5 Traveler, and the Eagle Rock, and the Short Nose Eagle, and so it goes on and on. And Kreider Risa built, we thought, the best, you know, that was the beginning of Fairchild. These two men, like all, I guess everything on earth has to be started by someone. It's not always men. I'll tell you, we don't want to tell too many people about this, but you know, these ladies actually make our lives. I lost my wife now, she's gone. And she made my life. I had no life, really. And I have to tell you, we used to kid a lot about it. And one of the fellows I flew with, I think it was Capital Airlines, or one of the airlines I flew with, one of them, and we'd kid one another back and forth, and he said he always kissed his airplane goodnight instead of his wife. Now, he had a problem.
Joe, tell us just a little bit about, I know you did some barnstorming. Can you tell us just a little bit about those days?
Ah, yes. You know, when we first started out, we didn't have the laws to control us and keep us from killing ourselves and others. So now we have laws, and Ron and I know it well. They have procedure. What are you doing violating the procedure? So this is what takes care of us. Now, the early days of barnstorming, now, we didn't have to. We had no laws to control us. So we learned more from one another. Once we could get the airplane off the ground and get it back again, we were in business. We're ready to start a flourishing business right away. We could go to a town and slop through what we thought was stunt flying in those days. And today it's precision aerobatics. It's really something. I'll tell you, it's like everything, and now laws along with it. Anyway, we had no laws to control us. So all we do is slop through some and take the firemen and the policemen. They were always the brave ones. And up for a ride. And then the farmers always took good care of us. It was a wonderful life. Talk about getting spoiled. We really got spoiled.
Well, let's go on to the DC-3, because I know that that's one of the loves of your life. And you began flying a DC-3 back in, the late 30s, was it, when you initially started?
That's correct.
And for which airline?
Pennsylvania Central.
Pennsylvania Central. And I assume you started out as a co-pilot with them. And what kind of training did you get in those days?
Well, if you got your three landings, you did well.
That's right.
Wonderful days. You know, for all of the professions, if you could call it such, don't tell too many people about it because it's really not a profession. It's just a lot of fun. So what they do is give you expensive toys. And as you know, men have always loved toys from the beginning of time. No change. So they give us all those toys, and we just had a great time. I think Ron's team, his early team, I always had a place in my heart for them because they were, it was before they got the threes, and they were crop dusters. They found that would make money. So when the barnstorming played out, they turned into crop dusting. When that played out, well, the airlines came along. And so I was one of those two.
That's correct. And that's how Delta Airlines was formed, wasn't it? Back in those days with the crop dusting. And then you went on to fly for TWA.
Yes. The war came along, and I had 4 years in the war. But they took our airplanes, so we went right along with the airplanes. I was with TWA then, and we got the first pressurized airplanes ever built by Boeing. Well, I guess we all have our prejudices. Boeing does a great job of building airplanes. They're tough, and I hear pilots say this over and over. They build a real sturdy airplane. Douglas did too. Douglas both Douglas and Boeing just did a great job.
Well, and you flew the Boeing 307, isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And that airplane was here at Air Adventure not too long ago, just a few years ago, and I've had the privilege of seeing it out in Seattle once or twice. It's a very interesting airplane. First pressurized airplane, if I remember correctly.
That is correct. Quite an airplane. It was another tough airplane. The pressurization was quite a battle, trying to keep the heads cool and trying to keep the rights together and keep them from overheating and getting enough power to run the compressors. We ran the compressors off the engines. It's a good, tough, good old man's airplane.
And how about during the war? What did you fly during the war?
Well, we started the war with the 307s because, you know, we started a war with nothing to fight with. So the military had to take airplanes wherever they could get them. They even got down to taking these cabin Wacos then. I know this uncle who was one of the first to get around the world. Why, first thing you know, here he was going down to South America with one of these Wacos. So anyway, he progressed to the DC-3s too. It was a great airplane in the war, too. I don't know how many they built.
Well, they built over 10,000. There are actually about 10,600 of them that were built, Joe. Oh. And it was a very, very important airplane, not only in World War II, but as you well know, after the war, too, with the airlines, as far as the airlines are concerned.
Yes.
Well, I understand that you had a chance to fly a DC-3 just a couple years ago. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, when I flew the DC-3 for His Majesty, King Abdulaziz bin Saud, and I just lucked into that. You know, this flying business, as we all know I'm with my own kind right now. You have a love for flying or you wouldn't be right here. So, you know, when I flew to him, I thought, there's nothing in the world I couldn't do with that DC-3. We had no airports. We started an airline without any airports. Now, some people might think that's backwards, but it's not really. It was just like the old barnstorming days. So we just picked a spot, and there's where we were going to put an airport.
Well, I understand you did during the flight, they did an interview with you in Fargo, and we have a short film clip of that, I believe, of that interview that was done where you actually had a chance to fly the DC-3. And I think in the video itself, it shows you at the controls of the DC-3. So I'd like to share that with the audience at this time, Joe. So let's take a look at the video, please.
Everyone, an unlikely friendship is celebrated in an unlikely place. A friendship made with the Prince of Saudi Arabia 60 years ago by Franklin Delano Roosevelt is being remembered and revitalized in Fargo. Reporter Holly Samuels has more in tonight's Fox Focus.
One, two, three.
A new exhibition at the Fargo Air Museum aims to bring a faraway land a little closer to home.
To reconnect, if you will, the bridges and the friendships that have existed between the U.S. and the kingdom for over 60 years.
Saudi Arabia. Most Americans think sand and oil. But most Americans don't know that it once had close ties to the United States. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt became good friends with the first Saudi Arabian king 60 years ago. The meeting is still celebrated in Saudi Arabia today.
They met and they bonded. They had a true friendship that happened aboard that day on the USS Quincy. A friendship that's beyond heads of nations or leaders of state, but you know, kind of between human being to human being.
To celebrate the 60th anniversary of the meeting, FDR's grandson Delano traveled to Saudi Arabia to meet the grandson of that first king. Along the way, and with the help of the Friends of Saudi Arabia, they made a documentary. Both parts of the exhibit are meant to reintroduce Americans to the Saudis and to reform the friendship that once was.
As a sign of their friendship, Saudis serve coffee. So with the unveiling of this exhibit, people were able to participate in this tradition. Thank you.
So why unveil the project in Fargo?
North Dakota is the friendliest state in the nation. Everybody that you talk to that's been to Saudi Arabia, that's interacted with the Saudis, talks about how friendly they are. And so it started to make sense that this friendly atmosphere is where we would really like to cut the ribbon to open the cultural exchange between Saudi Arabia and the United States of America.
A friendly message in a friendly place. Holly Samuels, Fox News.
The documentary will debut Friday night at the Air Museum.
The original pilot that flew the DC-3 to the kingdom and spent 2 years of his life flying the king around. And his name is Mr. Joe Grant, and he is in his 90s, and he is sharper now in his 90s than I am in my 40s. He remembers every story, everything that happened with the king, and Joe Grant is standing right here. And this is Mr. Joe Grant of the Navy.
But you know what? Today, I get to sit in studio with Delano Roosevelt, grandson of President FDR, and Jan Roosevelt, his wife. Also, Michael Saba from Bismarck, North Dakota, Friends of Saudi Arabia, and Joe Grant. Now, there's a history here with Joe Grant, pilot, with Ulysses S. Grant. And so, not very often when I come in studio do I start thinking I need to get autographs, but this is one of those times. I'm gonna start with Delano Roosevelt.
Wish granted. After 60 years, that is. It may have taken a while, but an American hero was reunited with a good friend today at the Fargo Air Museum. Reporter Holly Samuels and photographer John Neas have more in tonight's Fox feature.
The Douglas DC-3. It's been flying the skies for 64 years.
We're sort of halfway.
But it's got nothing on Joe Grant.
They said, "Is Joe really 98? I said, "Yes." He said, "By golly, he hasn't lost his touch." You know how proud that made me.
Grant got to know the DC-3 pretty well in 1945 when he delivered one to the King of Saudi Arabia. It was a gift from President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. 60 years since he last flew one, this is a sight he thought he'd never see again.
You know, when you get about this age, you think, well, damn, I'm running out of time. I'm not going to ever get a chance to sit in a DC-3 again. Here I am.
Someone like Joe remembers when, you would be going this fast. This would have been a world speed record. And then he saw the jet age come on board to where we are today. And he's very clear, very lucid, and just a gem to be around.
A group called Friends of Saudi Arabia made the reunion possible. And now Joe Grant is flying his old friend again.
Yeah, what a ride. It brought back wonderful memories. And memories, and I, you know, as I thought, as I knew this airplane then, I thought you could go any place and do anything with it. I didn't think it had any limits at all. And now I get in here and I'm wondering about it.
On the flight, the grandson of the President Grant served so many years ago, and natives of his destination country.
It has different emotions, you know, being knowing that our first king flew in a plane just like this. You know, it's very nice.
There were two different flights today. We just got off the first one. It was a pretty bumpy ride, but Joe Grant got his chance to sit behind the wheel once again.
Extremely proud of him. Well, I always was proud of him, but now I'm even more proud of him.
Joe Grant made many people proud today, but he had one more request, that he could live just a little bit longer, just so he could remember this moment.
That's great, Joe. That is fantastic. And now, not only did you get a chance to fly a DC-3, then you're going to get a chance to fly one again on Thursday. So won't that be a great time?
Indeed, that's going to be a treat. Yep. And I'll find out whether or not I remembered anything.
I'll bet you do. Well, let's go back to 1945. How were you selected to deliver this gift of the DC-3 to the King of Saudi Arabia?
Well, I have my evaluation of why did they pick that dumb farmer to fly for the king? Anyway, I figured it out. And when I finally got down there, it was, you know, I have to tell you more about we men. We love challenges. The greater the challenge, the more we like it. So here's the thing. They said, who in the world could we ever get to go down there and fly that airplane in that desert and eat sheep and rice? And someone said, oh, I know, that farmer Joe Grant, he won't know any better. and I found out. Anyway, I love the challenge, and I'm so happy I got the job. What a wonderful people. What a wonderful people. And here is the thing that bugs me just a little bit. You know, we the people, because we are a controlled society, perhaps to some degree, but we are partly controlled. We have the wrong concept of that country and that people. I found them, you know, I want to go back to what I said a little earlier. I was not only raised on a farm, but worse than that is, we had an oxen that pulled our cart, my dad, and we were little ones. Why, here are my two brothers and my sister were sitting on this ox, and I can't help but think of that. So I think there's a thing. They said, well, this farmer won't know any better, and so they gave me the job. And we love challenges. I get back to we men, all of us. We just love challenges. The more risk, I guess, the more we like it. So anyway, once I got down there, I enjoyed it. And here's the thing that bugs me a bit. There is a people that's more like us. More like us. They had to start a country. The war had passed them by. Now they had to put a country together as we moved into the new world and the progress that the war had made. And they, when Abdulaziz ibn Saud, the great king, there was another great man right from the desert. Now, it's one of the most beautiful demonstrations of what can be done with education and training and the real feeling that's in their heart. You know, the Saudis have been our staunch friends from way back, from far back as I remember. And when this king, he was the King Abdulaziz ibn Saud, he was the father of Saudi Arabia. He and his brother put that great country, that country together. Now, he was also a visionist. Now, you all right here, all of us, and our leaders, the leaders of this beautiful organization right here, this beautiful organization here in Oshkosh, someone had to have the vision and, put it in another vernacular, the guts to put it together. And I just think it's absolutely great. And I can't help but when I drive along and see the volunteers, and I would like if I could do the same thing. But you know, it's awfully hard to crowd too much in a few hundred years, or 100 years. You know, the first 100 years was just absolutely great going. I couldn't have lived better because, you know, this flying world is a world that's in its own. It's a world that is just forever interesting and will be from the end of time. So that world, I was fortunate enough to have gotten into it real early in the barnstorming days, and where we had to work on the airplanes more than we flew them. So,
and that's typical of a DC-3, is it not?
Oh, that three is an airplane. We got to hand it to Douglas. And we got to hand it to all of our engineers. You know, the thinkers, the visionists, the doers of the world, and amongst us are doers, visionists, and the people who have the guts to see it through.
That's very true, Joe. Let's talk just for a few minutes about what it was like when you first went over to Saudi Arabia. There weren't any airports there to speak of, were there? Where did you land the airplane?
Well, the first landing was in Jeddah, where we were a very large in tourists, you know. And here they were with their white gowns, and my goodness, all these men kissed one another in the cheek, and I thought, boy, we got our heads sticking out the window watching this, you know. And we thought, oh my, what are we getting into? And then it was our turn to get out after all these dignitaries got out, you know. And Prince Faisal was one of the important people that was on that entourage. We had an old airplane loaded with them, and you couldn't overload a DC-3. You can just keep piling them in there just as long as you wish. It'll still fly. So anyway, it was our turn to get off. I got off, and when I went to shake hands with one of the military people who went to meet me, he didn't turn loose of my hand, you know. I said, oh my God. What am I getting into here? But I learned, you know, these people's feelings are true. It's from their heart. They're like, I told you I was prejudiced, and I am. I believe that farmers, I think farmers seem to go that way, you know, they're true, and I guess I'm prejudiced. Whether they are or not doesn't enter into it all. It's just what's in my heart. So this is the Saudis, and they're loyal to us. They're loyal friends. They know they need us. We need them too. And they, from President Roosevelt, there they saw in this leader, and in America, that's us, they saw this leadership that our country had taking them through that great war and won it. So he thought, hey, that's just what I need. And he embarked on that very thing of feeding the money like President Roosevelt. President Roosevelt was the father of our country. What a great president. And now, luckily, we're going to have his grandson here. And his son, I guess.
That's correct. That's
his
correct.
Son. And Delano. Yeah. And I keep studying him. He's a chip off that old block, and we sure need them. And this is what this king saw in President Roosevelt and our country. All of us became leaders of Saudi Arabia.
Joe, when you landed, in, actually, the DC-3 was the beginning of Saudi Arabian Airlines. And as I understand it, some of the places you used to land there, that they would actually go out and drive trucks up and down so that there'd be some lines in the sand and maybe put some flares out and a few things like that. And then you really didn't even have any idea where you were half the time, did you?
Well, yes, really. When I was given an airplane to fly with the king, I wanted a full set of celestial navigation. You know, the old days, that was the way to navigate. And I, before the war, when I was flying DC-3s, I had bought an old sextant. And when I'd sit up there in the cockpit, I'd start shooting stars. And when I got home, I'd make some more. So finally, when I got to be more where I could have my own say-so a bit, I checked out as a celestial navigator. So now, when I would go for His Majesty off in the desert someplace, why, at night, I would go ahead and take a good 3 or 4 star fix and pinpoint where we were. Then I'd get on the our radio man, we use native Saudis, and send that information back to Dhahran and Jeddah, so everyone would know where we were, not just the Bedouin. Let's see, the way we, you know, I think that we've been a bit mixed up through the years. We think we have to have airports before we have airplanes. We did it the other way. When the war wound down, why, we went into Cairo and bought five DC-3s and started an airline. We didn't have any airports. We had, so I think maybe we're a bit mixed up over here. We think we have to have airports first. And what we would do is we'd roll the wheels on the ground, and Ron knows it well, and you feel it. You feel whether it's hard or not, whether it supports you. If it supports you, well, you've already put your marks there. Now you come back around and put your wheels right down there and stop it and get out and put some rocks, one end of where we were going to have the runway, and some rocks on the other end. That's our airport.
Well, that sounds interesting. When was the last time you were in Saudi Arabia?
Well, about 2 years ago.
The last time was about a month and a half ago.
Oh, a year and a half ago, yeah. Yeah, lucky I got someone here to keep me out of trouble. And I got a promise before I came on. I said, hey, Mike, I said, you and Ron have got to keep me out of trouble. You know the real truth. My wife kept me out of trouble all those years because I always talked it over with her. And when I lost my partner, I've got to hunt someone to keep me out of trouble.
Well, we're going to have the privilege on Thursday of flying into Aeroshell Square at 12 o'clock for those of you who are going to be around. And at that point in time, I think one of the prince of Saudi Arabia going to be with us also, Joe?
Yes. It takes me back to what I said just a little bit earlier in regard to education and training. We must not lose sight of staying out in front in regard to education and training, especially education. We've got, and we are doing a great job, but never good enough. So I think this prince who we're going to meet, what a great man. Here's a man now, he had access to all the education he wished and training. And now he's an astronaut. He's a great man. I won't go into it. He's truly, I like him, but then I told you I was prejudiced anyway. He's a pilot.
Well, Joe, it's certainly been a pleasure. I just need to ask you this. When we fly on Thursday, are you going to be in the left seat or the right seat?
Well, it doesn't make much difference. Ron, you probably remember when we used to switch seats with our co-pilot. So wherever you put me, I think you'll keep me out of trouble.
Well, now, do you remember how to put the gear up? You know, that's the biggest challenge on a DC-3.
Oh, that's right. I had to pump that, as I remember. Yeah, and the old water heaters, we'd go back there and try to keep them alive. Oh, wonderful memories, wonderful memories. There's no, the flying business. You know, here when we're young, we do a lot of stupid things. Some smart things too. So this happened. There was a pilot who, when I was young, I was getting a bad name. I thought a good name, but it was a bad name really, because I slopped through aerobatics and that sort of thing. And there was a pilot by the name of Peg Dietz. Now, I know there's some pilots here who may try this. My advice, don't do it. You know, here's what it is. And I saw it just the other day, and I bet a lot of you saw it on the news. You know what this fella did, what this pilot did, aerobatic pilot, I guess when he got through doing his thing, he kicked it into a spin and he spun it down and saved just enough altitude to level off and land. It's all right as long as the spin doesn't flatten out. Anyway, I picked it up from a fellow by the name of Peg Dietz. I'll never forget his name because he got killed. And that's what he used to do. So I did that then, and I thought, oh boy, I've really got something here now. And then I got a short nosed Eagle. When the Kenner airplane first came out, they had a short nose on it. And in a spin, it would flatten out. Now, twins will do the same thing. So we want to watch that on a good many airplanes, especially some of our twins will flatten. Anyway, you won't be aware of it flattening. It's not that much. But I doggone near got knocked off and changed my whole life. I thought, oh, well, I'll go to flying airlines now. And
that's right. Well, Joe, our time is up, and it's certainly been a pleasure and an honor to talk with you this evening, and I'm looking forward to our flight on Thursday very much. Let's give Joe a big hand.
May I say that books are on sale over there. Joe has also agreed to give away one of these rings.
Oh, yes.
I might tell you that proceeds from the books are going to be used. You'll see on that flight coming in an airplane trailing our airplane with some kids that are disabled, with Jessica Cox, the young lady who is an armless pilot. Some of the proceeds from the rings and the books are going to go towards those kinds of efforts to help those kinds of folks be able to fly and get into the airline industry. So if you need some books, if you can't get them autographed tonight, you know, he'll be around for a few days, but thank you very much. By the way, Joe got out of the hospital to come here. He was on oxygen, on his flight over here, and he said, I wouldn't miss this for the world. So thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's great.